This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Elaine Meyer with us on the program. Elaine is writer and associate editor on the 2x2 project at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. She also serves as the associate director of communications for the Department of Epidemiology at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Elaine is the author of an article for the 2x2 project entitled Gambling with America's Health, the Public Health Costs of Legal Gambling. We're going to be talking with Elaine about that article and how gambling impacts public health. And I do need to mention before we begin that the views Elaine shares with us today are her own and not the views necessarily of Columbia University. Elaine, thanks so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters.
Thanks so much for having me, John.
Well, we appreciate it and appreciate your time. Elaine, what led to your interest in writing about the public health costs of gambling?
One of our faculty members here in the epidemiology department, named Sylvia Martins, is a researcher who focuses on gambling addiction. And when she came in a couple years ago, I started noticing her studies, and I thought, that's interesting. You don't see a lot of research about gambling addiction, especially in epidemiology, and which is focused on looking at population-level causes of diseases and disorders. So I thought, well, it would be really useful to write an article about this subject, and I thought it would be interesting to, in particular, look at it as an issue of balancing health concerns with economic concerns or with economic benefits. So I actually went into the article assuming that legal gambling had only economic benefits because of jobs and things like that and tax revenue. But the research I did really, really changed my view on that. So that's how it all began.
Well, that's interesting. And I would expect that individuals, both in academia and outside of academia, may start out from the same standpoint. But very often we have seen that after folks dig into the issues and they understand all of the implications of legalized gambling, often have a change of perspective. In the article, you quote an expert who says that the increase in gambling addiction is one of the nation's biggest public health problems. In your opinion, why don't we hear more about the public health costs of gambling?
Well, I think that's a really important question, and I think that there are a few reasons, some having to do with the influence of the gambling industry and some having to do with just the stature of public health in our society. First of all, one reason I think is there just isn't a lot of public health research in this area compared to drugs or alcohol addiction. Research like what types of populations are most likely to become addicted to gambling? Are there certain environments where gambling addiction is more common? Things like that. And the National Institutes of Health, which are the fund the majority of public health research, they don't actually have a national center that funds research into addictions that aren't drug or alcohol addictions. So they have a center for drug addictions, another center for alcohol addictions, but if somebody wants to do a gambling addiction study, they typically have to tie it into drug or alcohol addiction. I think researchers I spoke with seem to think it would be more useful if the NIH had a broader way to fund addiction. The second reason I think that the public health aspect of gambling isn't really widely discussed is that the American Gaming Association, which is the trade organization for casinos and like slot machine manufacturers, they fund a research center called the National Council for Responsible Gambling. And they will tell you that that center is independent from them. It has a scientific review board, and that is all true. The thing is about that organization, they fund research into gambling addiction that look mostly at neuroscientific brain activity type studies and correlates into gambling addiction. So that tends to focus the research, or that tends to focus the attention on the person, the individual, and kind of and makes it seem that gambling is something, you know, just in the head of the addict. And they have done a few studies that look at the relationship between the availability of gambling and addiction, but they really have not funded a lot of research on that. Just an interesting thing is that the American the Public Health Advocacy Institute, which is a legal advocacy group, has actually criticized the gambling industry for their role in the research that they fund, saying that they've kind of it's led to the minimization of the public health issue of gambling. So that's kind of an interesting side note. Another thing I think is just public health. It has a difficult time in general getting a hearing in this country, a public health perspective on issues like addiction. Our society tends to focus on how to cure the individual with pills and things like that, which is useful, but it's not the only way to think of health issues.
And speaking of that addiction and addictive nature, your article does address the fact that video machine gambling, especially electronic slot machines, are particularly addictive. Tell us about today's slot machines and why they are considered to be the most addictive form of gambling. And in fact, they have been referred to by some gambling experts as the crack cocaine of gambling. Why is that?
Yeah, I've heard that too. So the book to read about this is called Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas by Natasha Dauschel. And she's the authority on this. But what she says and what I've read from her and other experts is that slot machines are engineered to play to the brain's reward center. I should make a point of distinguishing between the old slot machines that a lot of us who don't gamble picture, which have the one-arm kind of lever, the so-called one-arm bandits, and the new electronic slot machines. The old slot machines, if you pulled the lever and you lined up three symbols and they were all lined, you say you got, I don't know, say a sun or something, then you would win. If those symbols didn't align, you wouldn't win. But in the new slot machine, there are actually multiple lines, and you can win many different ways. But if, say, you put in 50 cents and you win maybe 25 lines, so you win 25 cents, but you still lost 25 cents. It kind of, the way slot machines are designed makes it seem like you've won even though you've lost money, and that stimulates the brain's reward center. And there aren't a lot of breaks between, or there are, I should say, there's very little break between each move, and so that also quickens the addictive aspects of it. It increases the addictive aspects, I should say. Whereas if you're playing like poker or blackjack, there are more breaks between when the dealer redeals and things like that. And there are even things like ergonomic chairs that are available for that casinos put on these machines to keep players as comfortable as possible. So it's pretty, I would say, engineered from what I understand.
Well, and I have certainly read, and we have interviewed Natasha Dauschel about her Addiction by Design reports, and clearly, essentially everything, according to her study, her research, and her reports, everything about a gambling casino, particularly gambling casinos that focus on video poker or electronic slot machines, are designed to keep the gambler there as long as possible and to provide an environment that entices them to continue playing and makes it as attractive to them as possible, so that they will, these gamblers will, to what the industry calls play to extinction, or basically to the point that they have no money left. It's very interesting, and I think important for folks to understand all of the ergonomics of the design of the machines, the chairs, the environment, as well as the sounds and the lights and everything is designed to keep players playing as much as possible. Now, Elaine, you note in the article that it has taken the public health community a while to begin to recognize gambling as an addiction similar to that of a drug and alcohol addiction. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think there are a few reasons. I think one is in our culture, we tend to see addiction as substance-based, especially drugs, alcohol, and cigarettes. So So the idea of a behavioral addiction like gambling is hard for people to wrap their brains around. And we talk, there are other behavioral addictions that have been proposed. They're not technically considered addictions according to the Diagnostic Statistics Manual, but things like shopping addiction or TV addiction, and people kind of speak of those jokingly. So I think gambling kind of falls under that same category, even though it is considered a addictive diagnosis, according to the most, it was classified that way in 2013. Although I should point out that mental health professionals have said for years that they see the same behavior in problem gamblers as they do in people with drug or alcohol addictions, things like financial problems or bankruptcy, marital strife, suicidal thoughts, things like that. And as for why the public health community in particular might not be aware of gambling, I think it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, that not a lot of grant money goes to fund this research. And another issue that a couple of sources pointed out to me is that, some of your viewers may know, gambling revenue, the reason why states support casinos is because they get some of the revenue to go into, they get taxes to go to their revenue. So some people pointed out that this is kind of a conflict of interest, that states are so dependent on gambling revenue that it gives them less incentive to fund public health professionals who would look into gambling addiction. And one person I spoke with for my article was a retired epidemiologist actually from Columbia who has tried to get various New York state agencies to do a study of gambling patterns once New York, if and when New York builds casinos. And he said there's just been no interest. It's been very hard to get anyone interested, even though New York has a pretty strong public health research, you know, support compared to some other states.
Well, Elaine, unfortunately, we're nearly out of time for this week. Where can our listeners go to get a copy of your article, Gambling with America's Health, The Public Health Cost of Legal Gambling?
Sure. Thanks for asking. So they can go to the 2x2project.org, and that's the 2x2project.org, and then it's /gambling-public-health.
Great. Let me repeat that. It's the 2x2project.org. Again, THE, the number 2, the letter X, the number 2, project.org. And we certainly know that many of our listeners will be interested to visit your website and read your report and learn more about this. This is an issue that the North Carolina Family Policy Council cares deeply about. We have been working to educate lawmakers and the public on the myriad of negative harms associated with gambling, and particularly as we have the prospects of yet another Indian gambling casino cropping up in our state, if the Catawba Indian Nation is successful with their efforts, with which we certainly hope that they are not. But I think that this information is really informative and very important for folks, particularly in those communities, to understand. So we will definitely encourage them to listen to this show as well as avail themselves of the information on the 2x2project.org. Well, Elaine Meyer, thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for sharing your insights on the public health cost of gambling with us.
And thanks so much, John, to you and for this opportunity and for the work that you're doing on gambling.
Well, it's our pleasure, and we appreciate you caring enough about this issue to spend your time and energy looking into it and publishing such a worthwhile and important report. So, Elaine Meyer, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800. or visit our website at ncfamily.org.